evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and as you know, it's one of my favorite times of the week to be here sharing with you, and hopefully you share with us, and I brought along one of my special friends.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard. Looking forward to a fun show tonight.
Yes, I'm expecting a lot of fun. If you get our email, you know that tonight we're doing things a little bit differently. Usually, we have someone on the show that you might say is a guest, and tonight we don't have that. We did not invite a guest. Richard and I are chatting with one another about things as we understand them, and you'll be able to call in and question, give us your questions. We're expecting a lot of fun tonight. What do you think, Richard?
I think so. I think we've got, as we discussed, more material to cover to fill time than we can imagine.
But there you go. Where should we start?
Wherever you would like.
Well,
at the beginning. Well, I think the interesting thing, really, we were talking about earlier is you were talking about what Yeshua taught, which is so different from what religions for the most part teach, and that is that he was teaching to go within, that indeed, I think the words were, the kingdom of God is within. And so in so many ways, that's what meditation is about. But particularly if you've awakened some of your clair skills, then what you find when you go within is can be pretty amazing, especially if you're someone like Carolyn. And so, Carolyn, it might be a good place to start if you just talk about the skills that you have, I guess, in terms of the ability to see things and what you can see and hear and feel and how that kind of unfolded in a way.
Thank you, Richard. I would like to offer a little bit of encouragement to people. I remember the time before I started on my work, and I couldn't understand. I mean, I felt this great sense of a mission, but yet nothing was happening. And I became very discouraged because people around me had all kind of really neat things going on, and here I was like I was sitting on a toadstool someplace. Anyway, if you haven't started on your work, don't be discouraged. If you know you have a mission, and usually people feel this, if you feel you have a mission and you haven't started yet, don't worry. It will come, and it will come in abundance because your soul is watching over you, and there are others in the world of the light that's watching over you too and helping to guide your feet on the path that you set up before you came. And that is the truth of the matter. We all set up a path. We all set up a goal before we came. And we asked others to come with us to help us attain what we set out to do. And I think that's very important. If you haven't started on your life path yet or feel that you haven't, don't become discouraged. There's always hope. Have faith in that, dear ones. There's always hope. It will come about. So with that said, Richard, where should we go next?
Well, I kind of proposed something to you and you promptly steered away from it, which is fine.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't mean to.
I think it's useful to spend a moment talking about the skills that you have, what you experience, what you're able to experience, a kind of array of past lives that you're able to see, and so on. I think it's a good place to start.
I do have access to a lot of my past lifetimes. And some of those past lifetimes are so intense. The memory of it is so intense, I feel like it just happened. And perhaps one of the lifetimes that's very strong in my life today is when I was Julius Caesar, Caesar's daughter. I really relate to her and the man that she loved and her life in general. So that's a past lifetime that is very intense. But if I just stop and think about past lifetimes, there's so many impressions that pass over my, I feel like it's a set of eyes. I know it's my consciousness that is doing this, but it almost has a sense of viewing something, being a set of eyes, but it is my consciousness. And that's how I experience a lot of things today. My consciousness experiences them as a set of eyes peering into something. And usually what happens is I'll have a question, I'll ask the question, and then I'm taken to someplace rather quickly where I find the answer. It's exciting. It's exciting to be able to find answers. And I know that you can find answers also. So that's another thing. If you feel a little confused as to where you were and what you were to do, know that those answers are forthcoming. And even though we're talking about myself here, I would like to talk about something that Richard does. And he really is a master at this, is connecting people to their right brain magic. The magic of asking a question with the right side of your brain and then finding the answer in the left side of the brain. And we have some information about this. I think you called it right brain magic, didn't you, Richard?
Well, that's what we call it, yes. Yes, for sure. And, you know, the essence of what is covered in there is the ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness. I mean, for me, my journey really began with being aware of energies, being able to feel energies, though I didn't understand what it was about. I remember, you know, 20 years or so ago, I'd be driving around in my car, and it's like my head was exploding energetically, and I had no idea what that was about. And I've come to understand that, in fact, that was in part due to the fact that my Kundalini energies were active, really without any need to activate them, you might say. Some people talk about or experience a violent awakening, you might say, from a Kundalini energy perspective. But, you know, I really didn't experience that so much. And then when I started to work with Carolyn, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years ago now, we were working with the masters, and she and they had plans to awaken my ability to communicate with other forms of consciousness. They also had plans to awaken my ability to see things, but that hasn't got very far despite their best efforts. Whereas Carolyn really has all of those skills active, and I find it fascinating when, for example, she's doing a key past life session with somebody. She puts them in this elevator and they go up to the life that's appropriate for them to experience, and she's right there with them. She's witnessing what they're witnessing. It's truly quite extraordinary as a spectator witnessing this unfold. But one of the fascinating things that Carolyn's able to do is to not only witness a lifetime like that, but really kind of go anywhere.
So sorry about that, folks. My computer decided to have a holiday. So, yeah, I was just talking about Carolyn's ability to witness things. And to me, one of the more fascinating things that she describes is the ability to go to the center of the cosmos to witness all there is and also to witness the creation of the souls. And Carolyn, I think it would be fascinating for our listeners for you to talk about that a little, share that experience.
I'll be happy to, though I know I have in the past on another radio show talked about it. And it was something that I was curious about. You know, the fascinating thing about us, and when I say us, I mean as a soul, we can take our consciousness to things in the past. I haven't tried taking it in the future, but maybe we should try to do that later.
That'd be useful.
Yeah, we can choose a moment, any time in the past where we wish to go to. And one of the things that I wanted to do was witness the souls being created. Keep in mind, it's not the finger of consciousness that you are, but rather your monad. And what I saw was this immense, what I would say was a creation table. It was so immense, it was as if I were looking into eternity. I can't say that I saw the Creator, because I didn't. But what I saw was the light show, the particles that came forth out of the Creator. They were like diamonds of light, and they danced, and they swirled, and they coalesced. And out of that coalescing and dancing and came forth the soul monads. And these soul monads were turned over to angels. They came through the seraphim, which surrounds all there is. They continuously reflect love back to the Creator. And so these soul monads went through this, you might say, wall of love. And it was quite a thing to see. And my friends, it's the sort of thing that you can do with your consciousness. I'm not some exception to the rule. The rule is that you can send your consciousness to different places, and you can experience what is there in those places where you wish to go. We can all do this. I know one of the things that got me started about trying to understand consciousness is when Richard and I were in a park and I saw this tree, and the tree was leaning over water, and it was shaped very differently. And the consciousness of the tree started speaking to me, and it told me about the mothers that brought their children to the playground, about the way the land used to look, and about the stone that was underneath of the land that we were standing on. And you might say that experience opened up a whole new doorway about consciousness and how we can communicate with it and what it can bring to us. And when we work with the consciousness of other parts of creation, it opens up a whole new door for us. And this truly is what creation is. It is the bringing forth, as I see it, of consciousness of different elements of creation. I'm sure you remember that, Richard.
Yes, it's in so many ways, you know, my understanding of so much of this really has come from my working with Carolyn. I mean, her experiences have been quite extraordinary. Something that would be fascinating also for you to talk about, I think, would be describing what it was like in Atlantis, because, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who doubt that Atlantis ever existed, you know, and it's, you know, some people think it's that lost city, you might say, but it was a lot more than that. And so it'd be useful to describe that, because it's very relevant, I think, to, you know, in a sense, to this time.
I think so. And if it's not relevant to this time, it will be relevant to the time in the near future, because in Atlantis, people create it with thought. Their places where they resided, what we would call a home, was created in thought. And one of the things that come to mind that was in a lot of the homes there was this gentle breeze and hangings of this cloth that you could practically see through. And it divided their homes into rooms and set out the outside perimeter of where they lived. And the colors were so beautiful. They were vibrant. You could feel the vibration of color, if you can imagine that. And the flowers were so vibrant. It was almost as if the flowers were sharing their energy with us. And I remember the little vehicles that people traveled in. It reminded me somewhat of the body of a chariot, and people would step into them, and their mind could tell this vehicle where to take them. And this happened, and I suppose people could move about without the vehicle, but maybe they hadn't come to that conclusion yet. And I remember the healing temple and the crystal slab that people lay upon. And I know there's a lot of people out there with these kinds of memories where individuals lay upon this crystal slab, and the colors that were underneath of this crystal slab that was used to heal people, to allow all of the incorrect thinking to fall away. And it was the incorrect thinking that aged people. And so people would go into the temple beautiful, lay on that remarkable crystal slab, and the colors would work and drain away all the negative thoughts and the negativity that had taken hold in the body. I know that there are a lot of people where they could resonate to that, because they have spoken about it to Richard and myself over time. It was such a profound experience working with this that they have never forgotten it. And if you haven't considered it, maybe you can think about it now. Maybe you were one that worked in the Temple Beautiful, that worked in clearing the body of negative thinking so that the individuals could regain their youth, which in a way is sort of thoughts about today. People are so willing to think with negativity, to think of themselves as something that's not perfect, as not seeing others in their perfection. What a world this would be, don't you think, if we could believe and have faith in our own beauty, in our own perfection, and all of those around us held that perfection also. So much of what people reflect to us is in harmony with our thoughts of them. And you know, if you expect perfection from another person, you're going to get it much faster than if you are expecting imperfection. We all wish to be beautiful in our own sight, and we all wish others to see the beauty of who we are also. I think it's one of the most important things on the path. What do you think, Richard?
I agree. I think it's, in a way, it's connected in with the notion of forgiveness.
Yes.
You can't look at people like that if you don't forgive them. if you don't forgive everybody in your life, including yourself. So,
so true.
All of that is interconnected.
I know that a lot of people have heard about the giant red laser and the laser beam that was in Atlantis. And when the island fell, that laser beam, of course, fell to the bottom of the ocean. And there were some beings that went with it to protect it. And I was on a trip on a ship and called forth the beings that were down there with the laser and told them that their job was completed. And I saw their souls come up out of the water and go up into the sky. It was quite remarkable. You know, all life is interrelated with one another. We are not islands. We're all connected to each other in the present and in the past. What do you think, Richard?
I think so. I think, you know, to begin to understand that, and I suspect many people that are listening, or most people that are listening to this, will already understand that. But it's very important to, in a sense, own the fact that we have come many times. And you know, we have those past life experiences that we, on some level, can connect back to, and indeed are influencing our current lives on many levels, usually to an extent that we don't even begin to understand.
Yes, and we learn from all those past lifetimes.
Indeed. So, Carolyn, something that I know we've talked a little about before in a previous show, but I find it so fascinating. I think our listeners would not be upset to revisit a little of this. I found it fascinating how your skills unfolded, I guess, firstly beginning with the death of one of your sons, and what unfolded as you attempted to get in contact with him. Could you share a bit of that with people? Because I find it really quite fascinating.
Well, I think it was an example of one of the greatest tragedies that happened in your life was something that was planned. And it was something that was planned with my son, because I would trust him. And he crossed over. And, of course, I thought it was the greatest sadness that ever happened to me, and it was. But it was part of a plan, because I would find him. I would connect with his consciousness, and we would travel to places. He would take me to places where I had work to do. And, of course, I would trust him, could I not? It was my son, and I loved him dearly. I suspect that's what you're referring to, right, Richard?
Well, yes, but also more before he started to do that work with you, when you were searching him out and you visited a woman and there were things falling off shelves and so on as pointers. Share a little of that story. I find it quite fascinating.
I suspect it was my higher self working with me. You're talking about when I would go to the library. Well, I would sleep at night, and I knew I was getting information from the other side, but I didn't remember what it was. So I got a handheld recorder and recorded into this handheld recorder, and then played back the next day. You know, it's curious, Richard. I still have those tapes.
Yeah.
And I would go to the library looking up things that had come forth during the night, information. And it was like things fell off shelves into my hand, because it was information that I needed, that would answer questions that I had. I would get this information and I would have questions about the information and go to the library and research it, and it was like it was waiting for me there. I truly do believe that that's the work of your higher self, that spiritual aspect of yourself. Now, what I'd like for you to add about this, Richard, is intuition. You're a great one with intuition. Tell us a little bit about intuition and how you perceive it, because I think this leads very much into leads very much into intuition.
I agree. I consider intuition as, in a sense, as being an aspect of going within, because intuition is a, you know, an inner guidance, you might say, that we all need to learn to trust. It's pretty clear that women in general are more naturally open to that intuitive guidance than men are. And for me, I would have to say it's a very powerful driver in my life, but it certainly was not always like that. I remember, you know, I came through a fairly solid scientific and engineering education. I have a PhD in engineering, some of you will know. And I also worked in the IT industry for quite a number of years, and, you know, not so much on the technical side, more on the sales and marketing and general management side of things. But, you know, it was very much a planning and work the plan kind of world. And so I was very left brain until I began this crazy journey. And really, in hindsight, I spent probably 10 or 12 years of my life where nothing that I tried to do based on, you know, the traditional left brain planning kind of processes and executing the plan and so on would work. And, you know, I had plenty of evidence in my life that those things could work and had worked very powerfully for me. I mean, I'd been technically successful, you know, from a scientific type perspective, and you know, I'd been reasonably successful in business. I knew how to put that a business together and make it work. But for those 10 or 12 years, it's like when I tried to do things from that side of my brain, it just fell apart and drifted through my fingers, like nothing would work. And the only thing that would work were these subtle and irregular prompts from my intuition. It was the only thing that took me anywhere. And so it was like this gradual inching forward process that went on over that period of time. And really, it was that kind of process that led me to connect with Carolyn and begin to do this work. And these days, I've come to understand that the intuition is really kind of like a clearinghouse through which all sorts of consciousness can communicate with you, whether it be the consciousness of your physical body or your higher self or other beings on the other side, past lives, all kinds of things can prompt you, you might say, through that intuitive aspect. And, you know, in the world in which we live, we tend to be taught that how we should work is build a plan and work the plan and all of that. Whereas, in truth, I'm not saying there isn't a place for planning, because there certainly is, but in terms of, you know, moving forward in life and trusting the process of life, trusting that you will be prompted to do what it is you need to do as life and events unfold. And I've come to understand that that powerful and simple way of living works and works extremely powerfully. And so, you know, intuition is such an important part of how I operate in life today. can't imagine not having that in my life. And really, well, this... it's there for everyone if you're willing to open it up. Learn to trust it, learn to open it up and be guided in what you need to do to have your life unfold. And sometimes one of the hardest things to learn is if it's not clear what to do, then do nothing. And there are people that really struggle with that notion. If there's something to do, I promise you it will become clear. And if it's not clear, don't just do something because, you know, you have this bee in your bonnet or whatever. You feel like you have to be in action to be real, to be effective, to be of value, to be of worth. You need to do nothing to be of worth or of value. You are that by definition. And so many people in our world are caught up in this need to be in action, to feel that they are worthy, to feel that they are of value. And really, that can be quite a challenge. One of the hardest things to learn is if you're unsure what to do, do nothing. I promise you life will prompt you on what it is you have to do.
And so my friends who are listening, if you have questions, call in with your questions. We're more than happy to answer them. So where should we go from here, Richard? Got some thoughts?
Well, I think it would be of interest to again talk a little about how your skills unfolded, Carol, and how you traveled on overseas trips where there were people who shared similar experiences with you.
In the beginning, I traveled with my son who had crossed over, and he had taken me places, and we had done energy work together. But yes, I did do a lot of traveling on trips and met a lot of people that I had known in the past, and they recognized me. We recognized each other, which was interesting. And some of the trips that I went on was we had taken these trips on board ships where, you know, we could meet with each other in our rooms and do work. A lot of the people that I had traveled with were involved in this kind of work, and so it was really easy to learn from them, to work with them. And I think if you know somebody who has skills that you wish to bring forth in your own life, it pays to be in their company, and if you can, to work with them, because a person who is skilled in some of the things that we are talking about, nothing brings you to your level of ability faster than working with people who are already doing that kind of work. And so you can do simple things yourself if you don't know of anyone who is doing this kind of work. For instance, the telephone rings. And ask yourself a question, who might be calling you? After you start to get the right answer as to who's calling you, it's amazing how that brings forth confidence. The more times you get things right, the more confidence comes forth. You can drive down the street and you can ask yourself if the light's going to turn red, or if it is red, if it's going to turn green, and when is it going to turn green? Or go someplace and to be shown a parking spot. I find that fascinating because that is amazing. Once you start doing these little exercises, you'd be surprised how you could go to a busy place where there are no parking spaces, and all of a sudden someone pulls out and you're able to pull right in. There is something at work here, my friends, and you can be part of it. And all of that helps build your skills. So there are a few thoughts as to how you can work with this yourself. Was that what you had in mind, Richard?
Well, it's part of it. When, I mean, for example, your experience on the Nile, when you witnessed a particular being in your awareness, and share that story.
Oh, yes. I was with two other ladies, and we were in my stateroom, and we were on the Nile, on one of the ships on the Nile, and this being of brilliant white light came in our midst. And it was interesting because each one of us saw something a little different. I saw it as a being of white light so bright, I couldn't see anything other than the white light. And one of the other ladies saw a beautiful color blue. And another lady felt energy. And so we did a little shopping, and when they came back, they had this picture of Nefertiti, and they said, this is the lady that we had seen that had come to us. I think that's the story you're talking about, right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And also your experience on Rhodes.
Yes. We had a bit of a soul retrieval on the island of Rhodes. And I came across a church and walked inside the church, and I had this vision of being there as a commander, a military commander. And of course, they were the Knights Templar. And it was at the fall of Rhodes, and I saw this gentleman sitting in this chair. He was a leader of the Templars, and I kissed his ring, and I moved on. We got beaten terribly there.
The fact that there was another woman there who, you know, could correlate experiences with you.
That was the wonderful thing about traveling with groups of people. There would always be somebody in the group that could help in some fashion. Yeah, and she helped bring back those little pieces to help heal. You know, we go through all of these different lifetimes, and so many times there's healing that needs to be done because of some tragic ending.
Indeed.
Perhaps we haven't forgiven ourselves or forgiven the aggressor. It's really hard forgiving people who somehow have caused us great pain. And yet, each one of these personas that souls take on have some reason for coming into our life. So even the conquerors had some point of soul growth, though we certainly didn't think of it as time. So, Richard, tell us a little bit about your journey. We know that you worked with intuition, that was a big calling card for you.
It was. I didn't understand what was going on at the time. It was a very difficult time, really, in my life, having that experience. And the other thing, which again is very connected to this in ways, is the distinction between thinking and feeling. For most women, that's very obvious. But for most men, that distinction doesn't even exist. And I remember, again, when I was pretty early on in this journey, I went along to a personal development course, and there was a guy teaching a whole range of stuff, kind of a grab bag of skills, you might say. And he was talking, and one of the things he spoke about was this notion of thinking and feeling and the difference between the two. And he indeed made the comment that most men don't have that distinction very clear. And he suggested that we might speak with a woman that we knew, you know, reasonably well, and ask her what she thought about something and then ask her what she felt about it. So I went back to the office and, you know, I was running that business, IT business at the time, and so this woman from the admin side of our business came in to see me about something. And so I did that exercise with her, and I can't remember what the question was now because it really doesn't matter, but I remember being shell-shocked by getting these two completely different answers, And, you know, I was thunderstruck by that experience at the time. Of course, it's implicit in how I work these days, but, you know, I look back on those years as, you know, an extraordinary period where I'm very clear that my life was structured in a manner to cause me to awaken these things within me. So it's kind of interesting how the journey unfolds, you might say.
I think it's very interesting, and it also brings up another point that when we come into this world, we have a period of planning, and we ask those souls that we are aware of, that we have many times worked with in the past, to come and help us with a particular point, a particular mission. And we do this right before we come in. We choose our parents. You know, it's hard to believe that, especially if we have a parent that has abused us in some fashion. But we choose our parents. We choose where we are, what part of the planet we're going to be born in. We go through all these choices, and we're not always aware of that. But just remember that when you're going through something that seems difficult, why would you choose that? You might come up with some interesting answers. We're moving on towards the end of the show, and I'd like to throw out this reminder to people. If you have some questions for Richard and myself, you need to call in soon, because before you know it, we'll be off the air.
Indeed. And I think your story of being in Rome is quite fascinating, when you were traveling, and just share
indeed,
the story of being in Rome.
Yes, I was in Rome, and I was with a group, and we would be on a bus and do the regular touring thing, and then come back to the room at the end of the evening. And every evening, Julius Caesar would be there giving me a part of her story, and I recorded that.
Yes.
And then I did research when I got back about what I had seen. For instance, the color of her dress, they were the dyes that was available then. And silk, I didn't know that silks were available in Rome at that time, because you usually think of the toga, which looked like it was cotton, but silks were available, very expensive. And they came by camel. They came over a very long route from, I guess it depends on where they came, where they made the different silks, and came by camel all the way into Rome. And I researched that to make sure that that was really accurate. So everything that Julia showed me and she did with me, I researched. And she had a lover, Flavius. And I didn't hear anything from him while I was in Rome. And I was going to come back and write this little love story. And then when I came back, Flavius started visiting me and gave me his half of the story, which I have since written a film. And I look forward to the day when that can be produced, because it's a beautiful love story.
And I think your story about silks and so on, I think is worth fleshing out a little, because as Carolyn got started, it's not like she accepted that what she was hearing or seeing was accurate. And so she conducted a lot of research to validate that there was truth in her experiences. For example, Julia showed herself to Carolyn in these yellow, wearing these yellow silks. Carolyn mentioned about silk. And so when Carolyn witnessed Julia displaying herself wearing this yellow silk, she did the homework to confirm that indeed there were silks available in Rome at the time, and indeed that the dyes were available at that time to produce that color. So, you know, so many people, in my view, who supposedly channel that we see on the internet have really not done the groundwork to validate that what they are bringing forth is accurate. And in my view, probably many of you know, I put very little store by what most people are bringing forth. And, you know, that might sound a little odd from someone who does a lot of this, and I certainly don't claim that everything that I do is accurate. In fact, I am very skeptical of what I do, and whenever it's something that's important, I seek to validate it with Carolyn or in some other manner in going through that process. And so it's particularly, I think, particularly important to find ways to validate what it is that you're experiencing, either with somebody else, which was kind of packaged into Carolyn's early journey as that example she gave of the experience of Nefertiti on the Nile illustrates. But, you know, it's so important to find ways to validate what it is that you're experiencing. And
Richard, someone has called in with a question. You want to take that,
sure.
Lindsay, on line two and see what she wants?
Go for it.
Hi there. My name's Lindsay, and I would like to ask you, two fabulous, wonderful souls, how in the world did you meet, and how did this all come about? Because it's so fascinating, and I've been following this for quite a while, but I don't know the story. Can you tell me
how Richard and I met?
Oh, yeah, met story.
I'm going to pass that over to Richard and let him answer that one.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It really goes back to that, you might say, 10 or 12 years of mine in the wilderness. And Yeshua got off pretty lightly with his 40 days. But as I said earlier, I came to understand that the only thing I could trust was my intuition. And so I had a woman who was a Reiki healer who I would visit when I was prompted to do so. And Lee not only became my Reiki healer, she became my Reiki teacher and subsequently a very dear friend. And when I would go and visit Lee, I would be aware that when I was working with her, my intuitive skills would become more active. And I'd been visiting Lee, you know, with various regularity for, you know, maybe 3 years or so, and she was beginning to get frustrated with me as to, you know, why on earth I wasn't moving forward. Anyway, I at the end of a Reiki session with Lee, I just said to her, you know, I have a sense that whatever this journey of mine is about, that on some level it's connected to Archangel Michael. Well, Lee works with Archangel Michael and all sorts of beings. All of her clear skills are very active. She's a wonderful healer and does geomancy and all kinds of things. And her response was, based on the shiver that just went through me when you said that, I suspect that that is true. And really, that was enough for me. Now, by then, I was aware of, Archangel Michael had already been of interest to me. And, you know, again, that was purely an intuitive thing. And so I was aware of three individuals in particular who were working with Archangel Michael. There was a woman in South Africa whose name escapes me, and the woman is in her 80s now, Carolyn. Can you remember her name locally here? Again, she's got a...
Oh, Rona Herman.
Rona Herman, yes. And I was also aware that Carolyn was, at that stage, holding conference calls with Archangel Michael. So, I decided to join those conference calls, and after two or three of these, I suppose, one of the things that Carolyn offered on those calls was the ability to ask questions of Archangel Michael. So I, plucked up the courage and I asked this question. And again, I can't remember what the question was, or indeed the specific nature or detail of the answer. But what I do remember was being absolutely thunderstruck by this answer, because what came forth was information about me that I knew Carolyn didn't know, and I knew nobody knew, in this dimension, because I hadn't talked to anybody about it. And here's this information coming forth from Archangel Michael that, again, blew me out of the water. And so I knew from that whatever Carolyn was doing, it was absolutely for real. So, I began to follow her work a little more closely, and then I... actually was prompted not very long after I started to participate in those calls to write an ebook called The Coming Golden Age and How to Prepare for It. And, I churned that out very quickly because I had most of the knowledge already. And through that, a woman in Holland, of all places, I was exchanging emails with, and one day out of the blue she sent me this email saying... she'd been watching this program on Steve Fossett, who had disappeared some months before, and Steve had come into her awareness asking for to contact me. Well, at that stage, I had no skills. And so I rolled it over to Carolyn, and so that's where it all started, was through those links.
Richard, we're being told that we're at the end of the show. I don't know if you heard.
Yep. So that's
so maybe
that's
you
a
might,
long
maybe
story
you might,
made long.
Yeah, close it out, dear.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us tonight, and thank you, BBS, for supporting us tonight. Until next time, my friends. Good night for now.